Cool. All right. Welcome to the next edition of Expert to Expert. Now, everybody remembers that you had this long talk, physics, the physics of contravariance and covariance. And Eric, of course, wants to come and talk to you about
co and contravariance as it relates to programming.
Yes, this is the thing that, see, I think I understand covariance and contravariance.
I do too.
Exactly.
But what is
I understand it from a certain point of view because of my physics background and physics experiences, and you understand it from a certain point of view, and we sort of have a hazy understanding of each other's side. Let's find out if there's something, if there's a reason that they're both called co and contravariance.
Exactly.
Or is it just a joke?
Exactly.
Is it just a cruel joke?
Yes. So let's start with your great example from your lecture about, like, you know, traveling the globe.
Yes. Okay. So here we are. We're going to travel from Reykjavik to Johannesburg on an airplane.
And look at that circle, guys.
Yeah,
look at
so
that
big.
Circle.
Why
Unifon.
Are physicists are always so good at drawing circles?
Because we draw so many of them. And here's Africa. And here's Spain, and here's Italy, and here's Scandinavia, and England's out there somewhere. And I'm going to fly from Reykjavik to Johannesburg. There's my flight path. It's a great circle, which means it's a circle that cuts through the center of the Earth. Not accurately drawn, but the idea is this.
Okay.
I want to measure two things.
Okay.
I want to measure my location with respect to time. I fly over this coast at a certain time, I fly over some little islands here at a certain time, I fly over this coast at a certain time, so on. As I'm making this flight, I can say, here's a landmark, and time read such and such at that landmark. Now, there's another thing.
Okay,
let's write that.
So, you wanted to say, well, let's call that function position, right?
That is position, yes, and it goes from
time.
Time.
And we do time as real numbers?
It's a real number.
To?
Location.
Location. Okay, so this is the first function. So
you give me a time, a member of set R, and I'll give you a location, a member of set location, a particular
and
island.
And this would be like Azores.
Right.
Or England.
Or the upper coast of.
Or whatever, right. Okay,
I guess
good.
This is flying right over
and
Algiers.
And this is like, you know, 1200, whatever.
Okay, good.
Good.
That's one thing. Now, the next thing that I want to measure is how much fuel I have spent as a function of location.
Okay.
How much fuel did I spend when I flew over the Azores?
Good.
How much fuel did I spend when I flew over Algiers?
So, let's write that down.
Let's write it out.
Function. So, that's my fuel consumption. And you said that given a location, what does it give me here? So what is
it? It gives you a real number.
A real number again?
A different real number.
A different real number.
But a member of the same set.
Is it essential that that's the same set?
No, we could call it a set S.
Okay.
We could call this, in fact, if you want to, you can call this T.
Let's call that T.
And just call this one S. Yes.
Let's do good programming.
We have okay.
because the intent is that this is time.
Yes.
And then this is like, you know, let's call this, you know, we can use R here. This is the number of liters.
Well, in fact, if we were using a programming language that had units,
yes,
like Andrew Kennedy's extension,
yes,
F sharp, then we could put seconds in there,
yes,
and gallons over there. Or
okay,
whatever.
let's do our own kind of, you know, poor man's, you know.
Okay.
Perfect.
Now, I want to ask the question, what is fuel as a function of time?
Aha.
Aha.
How do we do that?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, the people that have watched the functional programming lectures should be able to figure that out.
Yeah?
Yes?
Okay, so now as a physicist, I'll tell you what I'm going to do.
Okay, I know what I would do as a programming language guy.
You have an easier job than I do because I have to introduce coordinates.
Okay, well.
But when I introduce coordinates, but let's get there step by step. The first step is, as a physicist,
and
I
write
like
it in your physicist
yes,
style. Right? This is the programming
language. That's programming language
style. Yes.
I like to have little angry letters for things.
I like to have long identifiers.
Yeah, the self-explanatory, self-documenting
exactly,
code.
Exactly, camel-cased, you know.
Yeah, I'd want to have little angry letters so that I can pile lots of them on a page.
Yes, and then with arrows on top and stuff like that, yeah.
So P of T, this expression here returns me something in the set of locations. which I'll make a bow to programming and write it out this way.
Okay. So, come on,
we'll just do it our own little lingo.
Yes, exactly.
This is in the manifold.
Good. That sounds much better, man.
It's more physical.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And this guy F, if you give it some M in the manifold, some point in the manifold, it's going to give you back the value. This expression evaluates to something that's in my real number line of
gamma. Okay, good. So we're still in sync.
Okay, all right,
still in sync. Yes.
Now the way I'm going to figure out what is the function, what is the fuel as a function of time, is I'm going to notice that every time I evaluate this function little p, I get a member of m. Well, geez, I can stick it right in that slot, so I'm going to do that. F of p of t, and that gives me something in r. You give it a time, it gives you back an amount of fuel. look at that. It's a thing of beauty.
So, my type inferencer will kind of say, is this correct, Brian?
This looks perfect. It's absolutely perfect.
Good.
So far, we have 100% fidelity.
Exactly. So why do we need to have physics at all? We can do everything with programming.
Well, that's what you're going to teach me in this segment here.
Yes.
You're going to show me that the modern theory of programming languages has absolutely everything that I'm used to in physics.
Good.
So I'm now the next thing that I have to do in physics. Can I go grab another marker? Let me go grab another marker. Good. Thank you. Unfortunately, all these locations are a little abstract. I need to do some numbers. I'm sitting in the cockpit of my plane. I need to know whether I'm going to run out of fuel. I have to put coordinates down.
Okay.
So, latitude and longitude.
Okay. Good.
So
I smell another function here.
We have some other functions here. I have a function that I'm going to call it x. And I'm going to put a little arrow over it because
I was waiting for
you. Were waiting for that because physicists have to do that. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. They have to.
And if I give it some point in the manifold, here I'm going to use the little m again, but it's, you know, we're going to stick p in there.
Yes.
If I give it a little point in the manifold, it's going to give me an element of, well, it's r2 in this case.
So let's kind of reproduce that here. So we already have a position. I'll call it x2.
Okay.
Because, you know, that is the thing, right? That's why these physicists, they always have like a single character.
Little angry letters.
Yes.
Yes.
But that's easy. Here we always have to think hard about meaningful names.
You have to hit the thesaurus.
Yes, exactly. So I'll just write this guy. Okay, so this guy takes a look at, let me just make sure that we get the types right. So it's like took a location in terms of landmarks, and it gives me
two real numbers.
Long,
yeah.
In terms of let me say lat long.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we could go altitude too if we wanted to go hog wild.
Ah, that's great.
Why not?
And by the way, Windows 7 has a great location API that gives you this information.
Fantastic. So
this is reverse geocoding. From the long location, you can get the landmark. And from the landmark, so this is stuff that's in Windows 7, man.
Oh, fantastic. This is really great.
Yeah.
Okay. Where was I? Now the next thing I need to do, this is complicated.
So why is that thingy up there?
This is physicist lingo. It looks like an arrow.
Yeah.
And physicists like to say that anything that is of the form some number of real powers in a row, real numbers in a row, that's a vector.
Okay.
And vectors look like arrows. They have a little foot and they have a little head and there's an arrow. So we want to remind ourselves that the angry letter X means
this is like Hungarian notation.
This is Hungarian notation, yeah. John von Neumann, these guys were physicists first.
Okay.
And they're all Hungarians.
Okay, good. Okay, so now
Edward Teller, you know.
Yes. Okay, so in Haskell, people remember that from my lectures, we call this Ixus, right?
Yes.
So we kind of put a little S behind it.
Right.
Anytime so we're doing the same thing.
Very similar.
Again, so far, we're kind of,
100%
fidelity.
Covariance, 100% fidelity.
Yes.
100% variance. We won't say which is co and
contravariance. Yeah. Okay, right. Good.
Now, unfortunately, I need a new function.
I love functions, so it's not unfortunate, man.
Well, it's unfortunate for me because I need a function here. Remember my fuel measure function?
Yes.
He takes in a point in the manifold. He takes a location.
Yep.
But I need a function, and I'm going to now write him in subscript FX. This is not F, but he measures the same thing as F.
Okay.
And I, what I want to do is I want to say that any time I feed F sub X an X with an arrow.
You mean an R2, right?
Yes, anytime okay, I feed yes. it an R2, and where am I going to get this guy? I got to get this guy from a point in the manifold. So let me leave that unresolved for the moment. Anytime I get this, this is the same as... So remember, our fuel function, little f,
yes.
took a location and gave me some gallons.
Yes.
So that's this is correctly written over here.
Yes.
And I need my new little function, f sub x.
Yes.
If I give it an x's or an x arrow,
yep.
and I get an x arrow yeah. when I give an m in
yes.
there, I get back the same number of gallons. I get back
okay.
a number.
So the type of your function is this, correct?
The type of fuel sub x's is that. That's correct, yes.
Good?
Yes. So far, so good.
And so that's kind of, you know, if you would have the kind of reverse geocoding.
Yes.
You could do that, right? Because I could then compose that from...
I can just call the geocode
X minus
API.
Inverse, and then call fuel.
Right.
Are you going to do that?
Yes. I'm going to introduce another step, because this,
okay.
this is the covariant buddy.
Okay.
I'm going to show you how that works. Well, I'm going to refer to how that works in the other lecture. Now...
So this is your specification for this function f.
This is my specification for this function f sub x.
Yes, so you yeah. want a function that satisfies this equation.
That's correct.
Exactly, and this is what we
I
saw in the kind of functional
function.
Programming lecture as well, right?
Yeah.
You often write down a spec like that, and now you're going to calculate the solution to
this
thing.
I have to solve this for this function. Yes.
Okay, great. Right, right. It's still, physics is just programming,
It's just
right?
programming is just physics. We were here first. Now, the next thing I need is a function that will produce these numbers from our P of T. So I need this function. Well, I've already got it. That's what this guy does. So if I go x of P of T, and then I go f sub x, I've got my answer. I now have... the fuel as a function of time, but through this intermediary of coordinates.
So let's kind of, you know, do it here. So we have P, which takes time. Position takes time to location. Then I compose it with this guy that takes location to lat long, right?
Yes.
And then I go from that and I do fuel... x's, and now I have a function from time in seconds to gallons.
R in gallons.
Is this still correct?
This is correct.
And if the types are correect, the functions are correct.
They have to be correct. There's no way out. There's no escape.
Okay, good. So we're still
okay.
fine.
And now we drop the final shoe and talk about covariance and contravariance, because I want to know how does this quantity vary with respect to a small change in T?
Okay, so let me just kind of write this one a little bit different. Lambda T, arrow, T.
Ooh.
Because, you know, you want to talk...
The lights are coming on now. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Although, am I correct in saying that we actually need a pair of parentheses here? Because otherwise this lambda t... No, you're right. We don't need parentheses. That's correct.
It's here.
Yes, the entire right-hand side
yes,
of
and then
arrow.
We can do eta conversion and
yes,
kind of, you know,
exactly
get rid of
okay,
these
good.
Guys.
I
should be dualized myself.
Now, I'm going to calculate the... May I have another?
Yes. Thank you're running
you
out of fuel
much.
In the pan.
I'm running out of fuel.
Big distance here.
I need to know, how does the fuel... And here I mean, on purpose, the f with no x, change with respect to t. And now because I'm lazy, and all physicists are lazy, I'm going to use the 19th century notation, but in the lecture I've developed this in the full modern notation. This is df sub x with respect to x times dx with respect to t. And we wink, 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 and know that times is really composition. This is the chain rule. This guy, we've already found out that F with no subscript is a composition of F subscript X with X bar, this function.
Yep.
So it's this part of the composition is actually equal to F, and we wrote that down somewhere. Oh, we did it when we solve this.
Yes.
When we solve this functional equation.
Yes.
Well, we learned. It's implicit in there.
I just wrote the type of that guy. Yes.
Now, this is the covariant buddy, and this is the contravariant buddy. And the reason is, if I change the coordinates, fy, dy, dy, dt, I get the same answer. And that means this guy has to co-vary with respect to the coordinates, and this guy has to contravary with respect to the coordinates.
Very nice, very nice.
The trick is for the coordinate-free quantity to be invariant with respect to changes in the coordinate system, one of the two buddies in the composition has to co-vary with the coordinate system,
and the other one
has to contravary. So that's where covariance and contravariance comes up in physics. It comes up all over the place. There's no theory of physics that doesn't use this. And it's fundamental. And the way I like to say from the physicist's perspective is it's inherent in the composition of functions. You can't escape it. It's inevitable.
So now there's something interesting going on, because you kind of, you know, and this is what physicists...
This is lazy.
The physicists kind of love these kind of, write these kind of things, right? But really the F here and the T here are kind of, have a very different role, right? Because this is a function, and you're saying I'm differentiating it with respect to the argument of type T.
That's correct. So I've now moved from the world of quantities, which...
D is really a higher order function, right?
Correct.
And that, in this case, let's do it for F. So F, in our case, that was that, right? F had type location in terms of landmark. And it gave us fuel.
D takes one of those guys.
That's that function. And then the T really says that it's kind of, going to...
Differentiate it with respect to the argument.
And then what is the result of that guy?
The result of this guy is going to be another function.
Okay, good.
This will be a function of time. And that function will give me an increment in location. So if I give it a delta time, it'll give me a delta location.
Okay, so...
Sorry, if I give this function here, df dt...
Yes.
If I give that a time...
Okay, yes, that's okay. I give you a time, good.
Give this function a time. It will give me back a function...
Okay.
From delta time to delta location... Function from delta time to delta location.
Okay.
No. Sorry. A function from delta time to delta fuel.
Yes, good. So I give it time.
Yeah.
Is it really a kind of dead nested function?
So
I give it a time.
Yes.
It gives me then back a function from delta time.
This D, actually, we're off the rails here. Because this F that I'm D'ing here is really F composed with P. It's this one.
Ah, good.
Yeah.
Okay,
this is why the physicist's notation just leads you down the garden path.
That's why I want to make it precise.
I made this clear. That's why I bring my cheat sheet here.
Okay, good.
The 19th century notation leads you right down the drain.
Because this is the thing, my gripe with the physicist. These things, they kind of, they love to write.
Let's get. I'm going to copy down the precise.
Okay, perfect. Okay, let's.
The 19th century notation is picturesque.
Yes.
Like 19th century paintings.
Yes.
Is it precise? Like 19th century paintings? No. All right. Let me take your eraser.
Okay. Good.
And I'm going to get rid of the globe, which we don't need now.
We don't need.
Put the actual precise thing.
Good.
And here I actually cheated in the physics and. you see, leaked into the composition.
You see, this is why static types are great, right? Because, you know, trying to make sense of this formula by looking at what are the types involved.
Yeah, you can't.
Shows
you can't,
that we're like, you know. And again, for, and when we talked in the functional programming lecture about this, the notation, like in Haskell, the notation is optimized for kind of dealing with these programs. The same reason here, the physicists, why Brian loves this, is this notation is optimized to manipulation, right? So you're kind of manipulating these formulas. So,
all right, guys, you ran out of time for today. Stay tuned for the second part. I hope you enjoyed.